All right, let's talk about pandemic preparedness, because right now, if you are not in an urgent preparedness mode right this minute, you're already behind the curve. Based on the news we're seeing right now, and I'm recording this around the middle of September in 2014, based on what we're seeing right now, this Ebola outbreak is out of control, not being contained. Now, they may get it contained, and I hope they do, but the perfect storm for the next horrible, great pandemic is already in place. Even if they control this Ebola outbreak, there's something else that's coming down the road, because humanity has created a situation that is almost begging for a pandemic wipeout. Think about it. You got high population density in the cities. You have very rapid air travel. And then you have an immunosuppressive lifestyle across the populations of the world, where humanity is weaker now than ever before in the history of human civilization. I mean, weaker in terms of health, weaker in terms of nutrition, weaker immune systems, more allergies and asthma than ever before, more chronic disease than ever before in the history of human civilization on our planet. On top of that, we have a medical system that is just absolutely clueless. All they want to recommend is vaccines. They won't talk about immune boosting, immune support types of functions, nutritional therapies, holistic alternative medicine. They won't talk about eliminating exposure to toxic chemicals in the environment that suppress immune function. And many of the medicines that people are taking actually do suppress immune function and make people more vulnerable to viral infections. So many of those drugs that people are taking out there, especially chemotherapy, but also including some blood pressure medications, anti-inflammatory medications, psychiatric medications, actually create enhanced or increased vulnerability to infectious diseases. So the medical system is actually creating the weakness in the people who are now extremely vulnerable to pandemic infections. So this, quote, perfect storm is a real danger to humanity. And if you aren't preparing to survive a pandemic outbreak right now, then I don't know what you're thinking, because everything that you depend on in terms of food, water, commerce, you know, financial transactions, transportation, everything that you depend on to live can be shut down by a pandemic. And just to give you some examples of this, think about how this is spreading in Africa right now. The Ebola situation is spreading in the taxi cabs. Patients are trying to find hospital beds. There are no more hospital beds available. They're all 100% completely full. But they're riding around in taxi cabs, going from hospital to hospital, trying to find a bed where they can get some treatment. As a result, when they're sitting in the taxi cab, they're infecting the taxi cab surfaces with the Ebola virus. Ebola virus is then easily picked up by the next passenger in that taxi, who then infects themselves by touching an orifice such as their eye, their nose, their mouth, or touching food that they consume. Now, Ebola spreads very easily on surfaces in this way. Now, think about where you get your water, your food. Think about how you conduct financial transactions. You go to an ATM. What are you doing? You're punching buttons on a screen that somebody else has just touched. How are you going to get money out if the screen is infected with Ebola? Because there's Ebola on the surfaces, just like there were in the taxi cab. Now, I know some people in the mainstream media will scoff at that. Oh, Ebola, you know, health ranger says Ebola infects ATMs. Well, Ebola can be on any surface. It can be on the surface of a doorknob. It can be on the surface of an escalator. It can be on the surface of a taxi cab door. It can be on the surface of an ATM. It can be on the surface of a refueling a gas nozzle at the gas station. How are you going to get gas in your vehicle when the surfaces are infected with Ebola? Do you have latex gloves? Do you have the willingness to put on a latex glove before you touch these public surfaces? If you don't, then you're really at higher risk. If there's a pandemic outbreak in your country, you could literally catch Ebola or some other viral infection by filling up with gas at the gas station, or getting money out of an ATM, or just touching the change that you get at a cashier when you purchase, you know, a bag of chips or a soda or whatever. Ebola survives surfaces. It survives on surfaces for a very long time. And you can't kill it with antibacterial wipes, because Ebola is not a bacteria. It's a viral fragment. It's a chunk of proteins, RNA, DNA. It it is not even alive. And this is a point that a lot of people don't understand. It's not a bacteria. It's many times smaller than a bacterium. It is tiny. It's a viral fragment. It's a chain of proteins, essentially, that can get into your body and take over the DNA replication or the RNA replication of your body's cells. It's not even alive. You can't kill it with antibacterial wipes. You have to kill it with things like ultraviolet light that create that fragment protein chains. You can kill it with things like bleach, but you can't kill it with just everyday antibacterial wipes. And think about, where does your water come from? Your water comes from, most people live in a city, their water comes from the tap. Well, that depends on the operation of your local water plant. Well, what happens if a worker at the water plant has Ebola and coughs into the water? Well, now you've got Ebola virus in the water. Will that survive the chlorine in the water and the fluoride in the water? Yeah, it very well can. And it can survive, and you drink it, you've got Ebola. It can spread very easily through water systems. In fact, I think terrorists have even planned to use water systems as a delivery vector for bioengineered weapons. That's how effective it can be. So what do you do if the city authorities come on the radio and say, well, you can't drink your tap water? What do you do now? Do you have a water filter that can filter out viral fragments? Most people don't. What do you do? Do you have backup water supplies in your apartment or your home? Most people don't. Most people are completely dependent on the infrastructure for their food, their water, their heat, their air conditioning, their electricity, their financial transactions, you know, everything. They have no ability to survive if the infrastructure shuts down, and a pandemic can shut down an infrastructure virtually overnight. You got to understand what's happening in West Africa with Ebola. Martial law is in place. They've already ordered people to shelter in place in their own homes. And basically, if you're infected, they tell you to go home and die because the hospital beds are full. They don't have any more medicine. They don't have any vaccine. They don't have anything to offer. Which is exactly how it will be in every country, even a first world nation like America or Germany or the UK. It's going to be the same story, folks. It's going to be go home and die because we don't have anything to offer you at the hospital. In fact, the hospital is the death center for these kinds of diseases. So if you go home, how are you going to survive there? Do you have preparedness supplies? Do you have a battery-powered radio or a hand-cranked radio to keep in touch with the broadcasts? So you can listen in to the news. Not that they'll be telling you the truth anyway, but at least you might get a clue of what's going on. Do you have food and water? Do you have natural medicine? Do you have the antiviral alternatives that the mainstream media won't promote and your doctor doesn't know about, but they're readily available right now if you know what to buy? Do you have any of those? Do you have them stockpiled? Do you have them safely locked away? Could you share some with your neighbor if your neighbor was symptomatic and needed some help? Do you have enough to help out your family and friends? You know, what's your situation? For most people everywhere around the world, their situation is 100% dependent on the infrastructure that will fail in a pandemic. And so they then become an emergency crisis situation themselves. They add to the panic, they add to the chaos because they did not prepare. And they then run around desperately seeking help from a system that can't provide it. Because the hospitals are overrun, emergency services are overloaded. In the United States, FEMA has nothing to offer you except maybe free body bags from the government. And even that whole operation is going to be very dangerous because of the ability of dead bodies to spread infection. That's the thing about Ebola. You don't even have to be alive, and you can still infect other people. That's how deadly and dangerous Ebola is. It kills people even after you're dead. Just a horrifying infectious disease. And so the reason I mention all of this is because one of the survival strategies that you're going to need to depend on is isolation. You're going to need to isolate yourself. In fact, some of my advice is migrate and isolate. And for many people, the migrate is out of the question because they can't get out of the city fast enough. They didn't take action until it was too late. They're behind the curve, as most people will be. So isolation is the only option left. Well, how do you isolate yourself? You lock yourself in your apartment or your home or your cabin in the woods or whatever you happen to have. You lock yourself in there. You don't let people from the outside in because they might be infected. And then you survive on what you have there until the pandemic burns through the population, which could take not just days, but weeks or months. How are you going to survive that? That's why I say, if you're not thinking about preparedness right now, you're already behind the curve on this. How are you going to get food, water, medicine? How are you going to cover basic personal hygiene? Do you have antiseptics? Do you have enough soap on hand? If you have soap, how do you have where's the water to wash yourself, to take a bath even? How are you going to cook your food? How are you going to heat your home or cool your home? How are you going to defend your home against others out there who might be really, really desperate and want to break in and loot in your home or your neighborhood or your building or your apartment complex or your ranch or you name it? How are you going to protect yourself? Now, you can bet the federal government in the United States, the federal government's role in this is going to be picking up the bodies and cremating them. And they literally have cremation ovens set up at FEMA centers all around the country in anticipation of precisely this scenario. They are ready to cremate the bodies, which is really the only safe way to dispose of dead bodies in a viral pandemic. Again, because the bodies themselves can spread the disease. So you got to have some way to come through the cities. And I know this is a gruesome description, but I'm trying to be blunt with you here in the interest of saving your life. You're going to have somebody like FEMA going through the cities, picking up the bodies, putting them in body bags, transporting them to cremation ovens, burning them to eliminate the risk of further infection from those bodies. And the people doing this are going to have to wear bioprotective suits. And there's going to be some rate of failure in that effort. Some of the people involved in this process will themselves become infected and become victims of it. If this spreads to the cities, it is a worst case scenario. So let us hope and pray that it never gets to the cities like London or New York or Auckland or Sydney. You know, my God, if this gets into major cities like that, Madrid or Hamburg or wherever, you know, it's going to be freaking apocalyptic. And just the job of picking up the bodies and cremating those bodies is going to be one of the most horrifying scenes in human history, if it gets to that point. And again, let us pray that it never gets to that point. But the fact that these bodies remain infectious means that you can't just walk down the street. You can't just go outside and go down to the local Quickie Mart and buy some more bottled water, because there's going to be dead bodies, you know, out in the streets. You know, there's going to be death in the air. There's going to be the cities will become death zones. Survivors will have left early. They will have gotten out of the cities. They will have gone out into the country where you have a shot at survival via isolation. Believe me, you don't want to be stuck in a city if this thing starts to really go viral. So one of the most important tactics right now to think about is, if you live in a city or a suburb, any kind of high population density area, you seriously need to have an evacuation plan. You need to have a way to get out. You need to have a plan of where to go. And maybe it's a relative out in the country. Maybe you have a cabin out in the woods. Maybe you have a ranch somewhere else that you could go to. You need to have a backup plan. Even if it's just taking your RV and having a place to park it out in the country somewhere for a few months, and having the materials and the supplies to survive out there for the time during which this pandemic disease burns through the population. This is not an exaggeration to share this kind of warning with you. People who are in Sierra Leone right now, or Senegal, or some of these African nations who stayed in the cities, they're now dead. Okay, you know, and may their souls rest in peace. And it's horrifying that they had to suffer through this. But the people who are alive are those who got out. They got out of the cities. They had someplace else to go. They had backup supplies. they were able to isolate themselves in their homes and their apartments and live on the supplies that they had stockpiled away for an emergency just like this. This is a life and death situation here, folks. And if this spreads, if this gets to major cities in Europe, the United States, Asia, Russia, South America, imagine if Mexico City gets a hold of this thing. Mexico City would become just a death zone virtually overnight if this gets into the city and starts to spread. If that happens, it's going to be a very clear dividing line between survivors and victims. Survivors are going to be those who prepared in advance, who were able to boost and support their immune function, who were able to defend themselves against this viral assault. And the victims are going to be those who did not plan ahead, who did not take action, who just believed the government was going to come save them with some experimental vaccine that ends up not working or never shows up. There's going to be a clear dividing line. Now, there will be some lucky people who manage to survive it without any effort whatsoever. But that's not something to count on, folks. That's just blind luck. There's some people who will just be genetically predisposed to survive this specific viral strain no matter what. And those are the lucky few. Most survivors will be those who planned ahead, who were able to have the supplies and have the immune boosting support to defend themselves against this onslaught. Now, the other really important point in all of this is that many people in a pandemic outbreak will die not from the virus, but they will die from lack of food, lack of water, lack of basic infrastructure. They'll die from being killed by looters, for example. They'll die from dehydration. They'll die from exposure. They'll die from lack of environmental controls in their home. You know, too much heat or too much cold. Inability to control the temperature of their home or apartment. Many people will die from these secondary effects of a pandemic breaking down the infrastructure on which these people depend. This is why preparedness is so crucial in a pandemic, because even if the virus doesn't kill you, dehydration can. If you don't have water, you're dead in a matter of days, no matter what. If you don't have food, you're compromised. You might be dead in a matter of a couple of weeks without food. Certainly within a couple of months, starvation takes its toll and you're probably dead. And starvation, by the way, is not a good way to boost your immune system. You know, I know a lot of people are fans of fasting, but a 60-day fast in the middle of a pandemic is not a good way to try to survive it. That's not what fasting advocates have in mind. You don't want to be fasting and detoxing right in the middle of a pandemic. So you need to be seriously considering the secondary threats to your survival and your life that are put in motion by the infrastructure failures which are caused by a pandemic outbreak in your major city, for example, or in your nation, for example. Interestingly, these preparedness strategies are the same strategies that will protect you against a grid down scenario or a failure of the power grid, which could be caused by a couple of different things. A coronal mass ejection, what's called a CME, is a massive solar flare, will take out the power grid. And the planet actually is at very high risk of this happening. NASA has already put out the warnings. Nobody's listening because people, by and large, are far too interested in celebrity news to think about what will happen if the power grid fails. But another way the power grid can fail is if there is a high-altitude nuclear weapon detonation causing an EMP, electromagnetic pulse, that trickles down and amplifies through the atmosphere and causes the burning out of all the delicate electronic circuits that run the power grid, that run the water plant, that run communication systems, that even run your car. And so North Korea has already threatened to launch a high-altitude nuclear weapon detonated over North America, causing a massive EMP tidal wave that takes out the entire North American grid. Thankfully, North Korea's leader is so completely insane and incapable that they can't even get a missile to fly that far without failing and falling into the ocean. So until North Korea develops that missile, we're probably safe from that. But Russia certainly has these missiles. China has these missiles. Heck, even Pakistan has shorter range missiles that can do this kind of thing. So as you are preparing for a pandemic outbreak to take out major infrastructure in your country, you are also simultaneously preparing against a grid down scenario or a high altitude EMP weapon or a solar flare or really any other kind of disaster, such as a nuclear meltdown scenario like we saw with Fukushima, or social unrest or riots or acts of war, an actual nuclear attack on your country. There's a lot of tension right now between America and Russia. For example, some people are afraid there might be a nuclear war at some point. I don't know if that's in the works or not, but by preparing for a pandemic outbreak, you're also preparing against these other things. And so this gets to the optimism section of this entire program. Many people out there who are really just kind of, I don't know, delusional, living in denial, people say, well, you shouldn't talk about these things because they're scary. They're really, really scary to talk about pandemic outbreaks or you know, grid down power failures or nuclear war. You shouldn't talk about these things. You're too pessimistic. I say, you're too pessimistic. Well, they're flatly wrong. The way to be an optimist is to have enough preparedness so that you can be rationally optimistic about making it through anything that comes your way. What could be more optimistic than having the Boy Scout attitude of be prepared? What could be more optimistic than saying, I'm going to make it through anything that comes my way, even if it's a Ebola outbreak or some other infectious disease outbreak, even if it's a nuclear attack, even if it's a solar flare, even if the entire infrastructure of modern society crashes and burns, we can make it through. You can't even, that's the best optimism that you could ever express. That's total optimism. So talking about these threats and then structuring the rational common sense solutions to overcoming them and surviving them is the ultimate expression of optimism. And that's why I'm an optimist. I think you're an optimist by listening to this. We are optimists by exploring solutions that support survival. It's the ultimate optimism. So to those who want to live in fairy tale, la-la, deluded land, those people are not going to make it. And I'm sorry about them. We'll try to save as many as we can. We'll try to empower them with solutions, but there's going to be a certain percentage of people out there that are just, they refuse to hear anything that's, quote, scary. You know, these people, they should drive around at night on the highways without their headlights on their car, because it might be scary to have something show up in the road like a giant deer or a rock, a boulder that just fell off a cliff and is in the middle of the highway, or maybe cows that have escaped from a local ranch and they're on the highway. It's much better, these people say, to keep your headlights off. That way you don't see anything that might be scary, so that you should just barrel down the highway at 75 miles an hour with a sense of optimism instead of turning your lights on and seeing what's coming. You see, that's their philosophy. And I hope that you agree with me that that's a crazy philosophy. A lot of people live that way. They love to live lives of delusion. But eventually that delusion collapses, because eventually when you're driving down the highway, well, there is something in the road that you need to avoid. You might need to slow down. You might need to swerve. You might need to stop and help somebody who needs a tire change or something like that. You might come up on a wreck where you need to help some people get to the hospital. So driving with your headlights on is good. Driving into our collective future with our eyes wide open, with full awareness of the threats that are coming our way, is optimism. That's the definition of optimism, is thinking about how we survive and overcome and thrive in the future. So I don't want to hear any talk of people saying this is pessimistic or you shouldn't talk about scary things. Give me a break. I'm here to survive and help others survive. Anybody who's not on board with that, well, I guess they can just watch CNN to tell them to wash their hands and dial 911. Let's see how that works out for you in the middle of a pandemic.